What happens when you bring together people from all generations and backgrounds and have honest, heartfelt, and interesting conversations? You get Gen to Gen, conversations with perspective. This season, we are covering the day, September 11th, 2001, a moment in history. This year, remember the events of that day, 18 years after they happened in real time. We will revisit the day from a host of perspectives, including my own. A brief editorial note. Because this date was real, these events were real, and our emotions were real, we have made a conscious editorial decision to not censor any of the news clippings or interviews. Because this day was real, and these are stories, and they're raw, and they're true. And because of that, this podcast may be triggering for some listeners, and we advise caution to listen when you can.
Freedom itself was attacked this morning by a faceless coward.
Eric.
And freedom will be defended.
Eric.
I want to reassure the American people that the full resources of the federal government are working to assist local authorities to save lives and to help the victims of these attacks. Make no mistake, the United States will hunt down and punish those responsible for these cowardly acts. I've been in regular contact with the Vice President, Secretary of Defense, the National Security Team, and my cabinet. We have taken all appropriate security precautions to protect the American people. Our military at home and around the world is on high alert status, and we have taken the necessary security precautions to continue the functions of your government. We have been in touch with the leaders of Congress and with world leaders to assure them that we will do whatever is necessary to protect America and Americans. I ask the American people to join me in saying a thanks for all the folks who have been fighting hard to rescue our fellow citizens, and to join me in saying a prayer for the victims and their families. The resolve of our great nation is being tested. But make no mistake, we will show the world that we will pass this test. God bless.
It was one of those days for anyone who is alive and living it in real time, where you absolutely remember where you were and what you were doing. And you remember these weird moments. You remember these weird things that just stand out or got connected to your brain for whatever reason. And the clip we just listened to was President George W. Bush speaking from Barksdale Air Force Base in Louisiana at 1 p.m. on that day. And I remember that afternoon, I had gone home from lunch, then gone back to school for a couple of classes to finish out the day. And just like in New York City, it was a picture-perfect fall day where I was living. Some of my teachers were trying to teach normal classes, and some were recognizing the moment that we were in. And I'll never forget my Spanish teacher who I'd had in first period didn't even know anything had happened until we walked into the room. And to see his reaction, a grown man who we knew had little kids, it must have been very similar to what Tracy, the teacher to the first graders, experienced as well.
Because Madison is near Chicago, our principal talked to us, and we actually locked down the school. knowing that Chicago is another big city. And we didn't know if we were going to be the next attack or not. So we locked down. And that's really when I knew, okay, this is really going on. Well, back in 2001, at least me, I did not have a cell phone yet. So, and we had the internet, but it wasn't a huge thing yet. So even to get on my computer and research New York, I couldn't. So I just, from what our principal told us that had happened, that's what I had to go by.
The dramaturg was giving his normal speech of how much a Coca-Cola cost in 1956 or something, and how much a quart of milk cost, and bringing us into the time era. And we all just kind of sat there with our jaws open, just thinking, this doesn't matter. Nothing matters anymore right now.
And Tracy had to keep teaching, and Micah was being asked to keep working, and both weren't sure what was next and how to handle it, how to process it. And I personally was left wondering, and I remember my classmate Teal saying something that I was already thinking, and that was that the draft may once again become a reality. Because we all knew this wasn't an ordinary attack which would receive a proportional response. But one thing that was constant across the Americans who were old enough, fear was a real thing.
And I had 26 students at the time. So as she's telling this story, I have all of these students staring at me, and me being the leader, the teacher, I felt like I should have all the answers. And I had no idea other than to comfort them.
I knew in my gut that the world as we know it was over. That life as we knew it, obviously nothing like this had happened in our country, on our territory. And there was a feeling of everything is going to change now. Everything will change. We're now in this world. And it was pre 9/11 and post 9/11. I mean, we weren't even calling it 9/11 then. You know, that obviously on that day, it was just the day that the world stopped. I mean, and it did. I mean,
it was when I got home that night. My roommate and I were watching the news, and I was just shocked. You know, and I knew that I had to go to school the next day and have some kind of answers for these first graders. You know, how do I explain what happened to kids?
Mm-hmm. And let's be real. How do you explain this? It is simple and it's complex. It's religious and it's political. But to all of us, it was home. It was humanity. It was life and it was death, live and in color. For Yad, it was reality.
Because of the nature of where I was born, the North region, war means something very different. Because I'm originally Kurdish. Kurdish people probably have been in war way longer and more frequently than the rest of Iraq. So to people, they prepare. They don't really care if you know. It was very much cleared out that there was no way any attack is going to happen over those five cities that belongs to the Kurdistan region. But the fact that there was a warning and there was in the news that a war might break out, people start preparing. So that was like the first thing. And it's a very weird thing, man, because I live in this very tech savvy society now, and people think about apocalyptic approach. And when I was like, you have no idea. When war happens, that's not the thing that you think about first.
And as day turned to night, the president arrived back in Washington, spoke to the nation, and with hundreds of firemen and rescue workers at Ground Zero and the Pentagon, we all went to sleep. And there are two things that I distinctly remember. The first one is I remembered not sleeping well. It seemed every noise woke me up that night, whether it was a train running through town, just normal outdoor noises at 2 a.m. My body was just hyper aware and hypersensitive and hyper worried about what the next day would bring. I'd never gone to sleep not knowing that my country would be okay, that my family would be okay, that the world would be okay. And that leads me to the second thing that I distinctly remember. I can't remember if it was before the president spoke from the nation from the Oval, spoke to the nation from the Oval Office, or if it was after that, but found me and my dad in the kitchen together. And I was a 17-year-old. And I looked at him, and a lot of things were probably weighing on us both. And I said, "Dad, are we going to be here tomorrow?" And it wasn't a question of him and I here tomorrow. It was more of a we as in a nation. We'd just been attacked. We'd had 12 hours to process it. Had seen thousands of lives taken from us on live television. And had had our way of life challenged. And did not know, did not understand how we were going to make it through it. What was next? Was tomorrow another wave? Was there actually missiles on the way? And it was a hard question. And my dad really didn't hesitate. And he said, "Yeah, we'll be here." And now that we're 18 years later, we are here. For better or for worse, we're here. But the emotions and the questions and the fear were real. And for Michael, who was in a new city with people he didn't know, uncertain of the future, and was just like the rest of us.
I was just hyper aware of every moment and every thought I was having. I was hyper aware. I was insecure. I think mostly the feeling is insecurity. And dread of waking up the next day and knowing that it won't have been a dream.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Gen to Gen podcast. If you loved it or hated it, please do leave us a rating wherever you're listening. And if you loved it, do tell your friends about it. And be sure to follow us online on Instagram or Twitter at Gen to Gen podcast. That's Gen, the number 2 Gen podcast. I'm your host, Richard Dedor, and this show is mixed and produced by Sprout Media at gosproutmedia.com. with consulting help from Steve Adams. Special thanks to 5 guests, Yad Conrad, Max McLaughlin, Alan Samuel Cohen, Michael Brian Dunn, and Tracy Dedor. Music credit goes to Joseph McDade. Thanks for listening. Was mixed and produced by Sprout Media, a digital media firm in Des Moines, Iowa, who believes in doing things differently. They believe in putting consumers and clients first, being a partner in marketing, and inspiring your tomorrow. They build websites, create digital media strategies, shoot and produce videos, and edit and produce podcasts just like this one. Check out Sprout Media at gosproutmedia.com, where you can subscribe to their podcast, The Buzz Addiction, or even request a free consultation. That's gosproutmedia.com.